There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Weaving across the line to celebrate victory is Max Verstappen.
Yes, what an unbelievable race, guys. On fire.
Is Verstappen back in the game?
This race was the Carlos of old. I thought he was absolutely superb.
Were you confident that from P2 he'd put it on the podium?
No, not at all.
He's in the wall, he's out of the race!
Is that a hangover from what we saw in Monza?
I do look at the mistakes that Oscar made, very uncharacteristic.
You question on Lando's side of the garage, how big a missed opportunity has this weekend been?
Hamilton's starting to find his groove in that car. That's exciting for everybody.
I think Tsunoda had his best weekend by a long way this weekend.
I have an unpopular caveat that I'm going to add to that point, though.
Can I caveat your caveat with...
Let's have a caveat party.
Let's have a caveat off.
The championship leader in the wall. A grand slam for the reigning number one and great drives to the podium from George and Carlos. We had a brilliant weekend in Baku. I'm Tom Clarkson, and F1 TV presenter Laura Winter and IndyCar ace and race winner James Hinchcliffe are with me in the paddock to break down everything that's happened. Now, guys, what a weekend. Bit of a crash fest on Saturday, not so much on Sunday. What did we make of it all?
I think once Max Verstappen's on pole on a track like this, in which overtaking, we knew it was tricky, it proved even trickier, it seemed, today, there was no surprise for me about the result of the winner. Certainly. How George Russell got to the podium was impressive, and Carlos Sainz's first podium for Williams, that is a story that I think everybody is going to be a fan of, aren't they? It felt to me that qualifying was the kind of chaotic Grand Prix, in inverted commas, of the weekend, and this was a bit more of a sedate affair. There were still bits and bobs, but obviously we have this massive talking point in that the championship battle has had another twist to its tail, and yeah, it's rumbling on to Singapore, as to the constructors.
I mean, what I think is so fascinating is if you were not following this weekend at all and someone just showed you the result sheet, you would have thought, what a banger of a race that must have been. So it was a very entertaining weekend. But as Laura said, the stage was really set with all the chaos that we saw in qualifying. But, you know, another absolutely sublime drive for Max. I think we all thought that the McLarens and the Ferraris would have made more progress than they did. I think we all thought that perhaps Carlos would have fallen further back than he did. So it was an unexpected result in a lot of ways. So even if the race wasn't itself particularly exciting, I think the result itself is very, very exciting.
Carlos said in the press conference after the race that while he was sort of giving it the big I am yesterday, saying, yeah, podium, here we come, he was actually not expecting to finish on the podium. We're going to come on to all that later. We're sat here in Red Bull hospitality. It's still a little bit windy, but the weather is perking up a little bit. Let's talk all things about our race winner, Max Verstappen. He was mistake-free all weekend. It was a very controlled win. His second in a row. Of course, he won last time out at Monza as well. My first question to you guys is, Max is now 69 points behind Oscar Piastri, our championship leader. Is Verstappen back in the game?
I asked this question on our post show, and I said, I think I know what you're going to say to James, and we had Juan Pablo Montoya on as well, and they both said, no, he's not, and laughed. I think, realistically, on paper, perhaps not, but we know that anything can happen, and we know that Max Verstappen is capable of mighty things that other drivers just seemingly aren't at the moment. And so if there's anyone can do it, Max can, is what I would say. It depends how McLaren bounce back from this one bad weekend that they have had.
But Laura, I'm going to pick you up on that, because I feel it's been two bad weekends for McLaren. There was a mistake in the pit lane today. There was a mistake in the pit lane last time out in Monza as well. I feel they're making more mistakes as we get closer to the business end of this season. Funnily enough, I was chatting to Helmut Marko a little bit earlier, and he believes that McLaren are breakable if we put them under pressure.
He would say that, though, wouldn't he? And, I mean, you talk about Monza being a bad weekend, mistakes in pit lane. They were still second and third. It was still a double podium. This was a legitimately bad weekend. Oscar in the wall, Lando P7, I think it was. That's an underperforming weekend for this team. But to me, talking about Max and the Drivers' Championship sounds a lot like last year around this time when we thought, oh, well, is Lando now, you know, momentum's on Lando's side. Does he have a shot at it? And we liked to play it up, and we like to believe that maybe, you know, for the sake of the entertainment value, it could happen. But Max still wrapped it up with three races to go or whatever it was. It wasn't real. I don't think anybody really believed it. And I feel like it's a similar sort of situation. I agree with you, Laura. If anybody can do it, it's Max.
You could tell he works in media, Tom. And who's a realistic racing driver? Pragmatic, objective. But I will say that on that point, the gap that Lando had to Max last year was actually smaller than the gap that Max has to Oscar. It's 69 points for Max to close.
But we're going to see, Laura, the McLaren drivers taking points off each other.
We are.
Well, this is a very timely moment because the Red Bull technical director, Pierre Vacher, is walking towards us. Let's see if we can grab a word. Pierre, what an incredible weekend for you guys. Simple as that.
It was a nice weekend. Nice weekend after Monza, continuing the success, and before shutdown was not as nice, and it's nice to come back at this level.
Look, what have you found? You introduced new bits in Monza last time out. The car looks, well, quite simply, it looks like a new car.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We bring a new floor. Looks like it's working. Maybe also some setup arrangement with this new floor that gives us a possibility. Then looks like we are more competitive after. It's again a low downforce track. We will see in Singapore where we are. That is not normally our type of track.
I was going to ask, is Singapore the real test of where this car stands and how much of a turning point the last couple of races have truly been?
Yeah, it will be the real test. You know, if we are competitive there or if we don't lose too much ground, then we sort out our problem.
And in terms of Max Verstappen and the way in which he's now feeding back to you, has anything changed in the last couple of races in the way he interacts with Laurent and yourselves of what he wants in the car based on his feedback and less so perhaps on what you're seeing in the sim?
It's clear that he interacts more with Laurent than before with him. He was in the other
sure.
team. I hope so. With me, not. No, he interacts in the same way with me and in the engineering office. It's just, you know, when the car is working better and we find some, you know, the atmosphere and the snowball effect of it is bringing more and more performance with it, even more when the driver is happy with the car.
In a normal F1 season, you're getting lots of developments throughout the year, and almost every development is about downforce in Formula 1. With so much of the resource now moving to 2026, fewer of these downforce pieces coming onto the car and these upgrades of that sort, is it giving the team kind of more time to focus on optimizing the package that it has, maybe working on mechanical setups more so and not really worrying about where the next downforce upgrade is coming from?
Yeah, is one aspect. After the development is still ongoing, not at the factory, but is coming to the car. The time that the engineer has to optimize the setup is true that is maybe higher because you don't have to test parts. It's difficult to say because, you know, at one point when you are behind, you know, you need update to recover. But looks like at the moment on the what we found is give us a possibility to optimize even more the setup. Yeah.
Quick word on Max. What is he? He's 69 points behind Oscar Piastri now in the Drivers' Championship. He wouldn't be drawn on it after the race here in Baku, but do you guys believe there is now a smidgen of hope that the driver's title is back on?
Well, I don't know that. I think it's a race by race, and we are, you know, you have to realize that it's so difficult to win a race. So difficult to win this competition, and we won two races in a row. It's too quick, I think, to say that we are in contention. Our focus is to make the car as quick as possible, every weekend before. The main focus is also to beat Ferrari and Mercedes on the Constructor Championship.
That would be an amazing feat, Pierre. Very well done this weekend and in Monza. Great to have you on the show. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
So I think an important point that we just heard from Pierre and Laura, you kind of brought it up, is Singapore the real test now? Because with two races on the trot, Red Bull has been the car to beat, really, in race trim, certainly. But they're very similar races in the sense that they're low downforce, low drag, slower corners on average. But when we go to a high downforce circuit like Singapore, when we go to some of the other tracks that have more of the corners where the McLaren characteristics have really stood out this year, I think that's when we're going to know just how much of a resurgence Red Bull's really had. I think they have closed the gap, but I'm not sure if they're level with McLaren on average over the seven remaining tracks.
Higher deck too, right, is to come. I mean, we had... Yuki said to you in our post-race show that it was negative deg. That hard tyre was not degrading at all. And so that then nullifies the McLaren advantage that they've enjoyed in earlier parts of the season, where their cars, their tyres do not degrade in the same manner that their rivals have been. So whether it comes down to that, and this has been two good races on the trot for Red Bull, I think you're right. I'll say Red Bull have turned a bit of a corner. There's definitely an improvement. Whether it's big enough, that may be flattered by a poor weekend by McLaren standards and a very good weekend by Red Bull's. Somewhere in the middle, the truth may lie.
Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of McLaren now. They were expecting, I think, to win the Constructors' Championship here in Baku. Instead, they're wondering what has just happened, really. One driver in the wall on the opening lap, the other driver starting seventh, failing to make any progress in the race. I was expecting Lando Norris to make more progress. I don't know about you, Hinch.
I think everybody was. But again, it was mistakes that really prevented that from happening. The mistake in the pits, the sloppy restart where he allowed Leclerc to get by. I think the car had more pace and potential. But we just saw it was so difficult to pass today with that, you know, lack of deg, so difficult to get by, and the opportunities that they had to jump some cars as a driver on the restart and as a team in the pits, they kind of both failed the mission, and starting where you finish was the result.
I think Racing Bull's Liam Lawson also confirmed to us they had pretty low downforce on the car, perhaps lower than some of the other cars, and so that meant that on that straight, Yuki and therefore Lando just didn't have much of a chance of getting past Liam Lawson, and his defence was mighty today as well. It was an amazing drive.
Hinch, what did you make of the mistakes that the McLaren guys made this weekend?
I think they were good company. You know, a lot of drivers made mistakes this weekend. It's a very challenging circuit on any, you know, weekend. The conditions yesterday, I think it's hard to overstate just how tough it was. And, you know, we were sort of chatting about this earlier, Laura. People on the internet were so quick to jump on, oh, what are these guys doing? Look at all these mistakes they're making. A gust of wind at 20, 30 kph, the difference that has in the car is just, it's so massive. It's so hard, and you can't see wind. You know, if it's raining, that's a difficult condition to drive in. But you can see puddles for the most part. You can tell where there's a bit of a dry spot. You can kind of navigate the car and conduct yourself accordingly. Wind is an invisible force. It's inconsistent. And it is, when you're on the limit, it's just so easy to get it wrong. I do look at, you know, certainly the mistakes that Oscar made, more today than yesterday, very uncharacteristic. The false start was kind of the beginning of the end for him, and then just, frankly, miscalculating it and overcooking it into turn five, ending up in the wall. Those ones are surprising. Those ones are uncharacteristic. But overall, it was a tough weekend out there for every driver.
As a driver as well, he's not used to running at the back of the field. I think the dirty air really disrupted him. We obviously had rain overnight, just one F2 race that kind of put any sort of rubber down, the wind blowing everywhere. There was not much grip at all today out there, but it was uncharacteristic is the word, isn't it? So uncharacteristic from Oscar. Metronomic is the word you used in our post show to describe his performances. And I think we're talking about Oscar's mistakes because he is typically so brilliant. He is so consistent. And we're so used to seeing just ice cold performances from him, minimal mistakes. And if the mistakes are there, they're pretty small. We've had three pretty big ones this weekend.
And this is a track he likes. I mean,
he was brilliant last year. Yeah. It was a coming of age drive from him,
yes,
wasn't it, last year?
I mean, Hinch, when you return to a place where you've won, surely that gives you a lift, where it seems to have had the opposite effect.
Yeah, you're right. And it's been really all weekend long, too. I mean, throughout practice, Lando sort of had the measure of Oscar, which, you know, I know this was technically his second win, but as Laura said, this was sort of the coming of age. I think that this was his first, or a more legitimate win in a lot of ways. But yeah, normally it does sort of lift you up a little bit. But Lando's also just performing at an incredibly high level. And I think we're now starting to see those two drivers really appreciating and understanding that we're on the home stretch of this season. You know, we're less than a third of the way to go. a driver's championship, a first driver's championship for either guy is up for grabs, and this uncharacteristically friendly title rivalry that we have going on and we've seen up to this point, I think it's going to start to fracture a little bit as the pressure really mounts.
But I love that everyone's sort of saying, oh, the gloves will come off between Lando and Oscar. And actually, we aren't seeing gloves coming off between the two of them. We're seeing external factors impacting the two drivers. You had, Max Verstappen, Red Bull's potential uptick in form. You know, if that does continue into Singapore, we do have a real contender here that Red Bull will look to leapfrog Ferrari and Mercedes. By doing that, could close the gap back up to Oscar and Lando as well. You also have factors like their own mistakes, and they are mistakes that come from pressure. Neither driver, I suppose Lando to an extent, was in this position last year, but not quite as close, and not with his teammate. Oscar Piastri has never been in this position before. He won F3 the first year of asking, he won F2 the first year of asking, and now he comes here, he's up against his teammate. He's got Max Verstappen, who's coming into some brilliant form once again. The mistakes are starting to creep in. And it's a fascinating battle between them. Gloves aren't coming off, but it seems the pressure's piling on from externally.
Yeah, well, do you think us lot asking Oscar and Lando on Thursday all about what happened at Monza? Do you think it was fair? Who decides what's fair at McLaren? It's the fact that they were both missing a beat this weekend, and I think they both were. Is that a hangover from what we saw in Monza?
Is it a focus from them on Monza, on team orders, on politics, on pit wall comings and goings, and therefore a focus that takes away from any other aspect? And we're talking minimal 1% here, aren't we? But is there something where if you linger too long on something that happened in Monza with a team order that ultimately saw a 6-point swing, it takes just even 0.5% away from performance here? I don't know.
Hinch, you won a bunch of races in IndyCar. I don't want to in any way highlight any negatives, but if you'd had a bad weekend, how did you move on? What do you think is the process that Lando and Oscar in particular need to go through before we go to Singapore?
I think the kind of best way to approach it as a driver is you give yourself 24 hours to sort of ruminate on it, in the sense that there's always something to learn from a mistake. So you need to pay attention. You can't completely ignore it the minute you walk out of the circuit. You need to analyze what happened, why it happened, how you can prevent it happening ever again. But by Tuesday morning, you have to then forget that this weekend ever existed. Every driver's had bad weekends. You don't get to Formula One. You don't go through years of junior formula career without having weekends that you want to forget. If you've made it this far, you've developed a strategy on how to overcome a bad weekend. Oscar's had that. He'll be able to brush this off and move on. The important thing for him is understanding how those mistakes happened, why they happen, and what he can do to make sure they never happen again.
Now, Gabriel Bortoleto was on Beyond the Grid recently, and he told me that very often on the Sunday night after a Grand Prix, he will fly home and get on his simulator at home to just try and rectify any issues he might have had in the race, and just sort of set the car up and in a way that he was unhappy in the race, and he'd try and perfect it on his sim on the Sunday night. Now, I don't know if that was available to you when you were racing, but is that the sort of thing do you think Oscar needs to do or not?
I think every driver is different. I think every driver processes things a different way. You know, Gabby's a young, enthusiastic, obviously with an incredible work ethic. You know, he's learning a lot at this level. Oscar's not a rookie anymore. He kind of knows, even at the Formula One level, what he needs to do, I think, to move on from a weekend like this and learn from a weekend like this. So I don't think there's a copy and paste answer for that. If that's what works for Gabby, amazing. He should do that. That's not necessarily what's going to work for Oscar.
Can I just make the point about Lando Norris as well? In a weekend in which, when Lando DNFs in Zandvoort, through no mistake or fault of his own, obviously that was the chassis issue, Oscar scores 25 points. When Oscar DNFs and Lando suddenly has not just the opportunity in qualifying when he crashes and will only start P9 to go pole and put himself in the best position the way Max Verstappen did and ultimately converted. But Lando has an opportunity to have a big point swing and it's not happened. And so you question on Lando's side of the garage how big a missed opportunity has this weekend been?
And back to your point on Singapore, we're going to learn so much about Red Bull there, but also about McLaren. I mean, look at the dominance that Lando had there last year. And both of those McLaren guys are going to go there knowing they're going to probably have a good car.
Walls are close again, though, aren't they?
The walls are close. Ooh. Will Oscar have made the jump that he, from last year to this that we've seen at so many racetracks? It'll be a fascinating development.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
For the first time with Williams, Carlos Sainz will stand on the podium. It's Williams' first podium since 2021 and in a full race since here in 2017.
Vamos! Vamos!
Best podium in my career, guys. You cannot imagine how this tastes. This is my first smooth operation in Williams. And not the last.
Carlos, if we could come to you. First podium for Williams, very well done. Look, what was the key to this result, first of all?
Probably just nailing a perfect weekend from quali, practice quali to race. It's what I've been looking for since the beginning of the season, just to nail a perfect weekend. I think we had almost a perfect one in Jeddah when we scored maximum points, but then the rest of the season has been really up and down with a lot more downs than ups. Very unlucky in some cases, job not well done in others by me or by other things that was in our control, but I always said to the team from the beginning that as long as whenever a first big opportunity of fighting for a podium comes, as long as we have everything under control and nothing goes wrong and we prove to everyone what we're doing, then and we get that podium, I'll be okay. And it's exactly what ended up happening today. We had our chance starting from P2. Probably if you ask many of us yesterday, we didn't believe the podium was actually achievable with so many fast cars behind. But it was a very well-executed race.
Is that what makes this so special? I mean, you said earlier that this tastes sweeter than your first ever podium in Formula One.
Yeah, 100%. This one means even more just because of, obviously, a year ago when I put my bet on Williams and I said, I'm going to this team because I truly believe in this project and I truly believe that this team is on the rise. I'm very comfortable in this working environment, also very comfortable with everyone around me. And I've actually been pretty fast all year with the car. I think out of everyone that's changed teams, which is not an easy task nowadays, I've been very competitive from the first race, very quick. But I didn't have results with me. I didn't have results to prove to myself, the team and everyone that some good things were about to come. No, but in the end, they did. I think life has taught me many times that this sometimes happens, that you have a run of misfortune, bad luck, bad performances, but then suddenly life gives you back if you keep working hard with something really sweet like this.
Carlos Sainz, with 3 minutes and 41 seconds of Q3 remaining yesterday, Carlos Sainz was on pole position for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. He gets pipped in the end by Max Verstappen, of course he would, but what a weekend for the guy.
So thrilled for Williams, so thrilled for Carlos Sainz. For James Vowles, his first podium as team principal. And I would say that lap he put in was on merit. It wasn't because the rain suddenly fell and no one can improve. No one generally did improve. I think only Liam Lawson and Max Verstappen really put another benchmark in there on that final run in qualifying. And then in the race, he didn't put a foot wrong. And we've seen, I think it was 11 incidents in 19 races for Carlos so far this season. He's getting used to racing in that midfield pack, whereas before with Ferrari, he's been very much towards, you know, P5 and above. And this race was the Carlos of old. I thought he was absolutely superb. I thought he handled the George Russell threat really well, knowing that, yes, I really want a podium here, but I'll take a P3 and I won't risk anything against George, knowing he's in a faster Mercedes. It's funny you mentioned that he yesterday was saying, I'm going to get a podium. It's a podium. Earlier on when I spoke to him, he said a top five, top six would be amazing. And so I think the podium for Williams today was magic. And I just want to give a shout out to Alex Albon. I think it takes a very big man to jump out of your car immediately and run to the podium to go and enjoy it with James Vowles and the team for your rival and the guy next to you, because Alex is P8 in the Drivers' Championship. He's got a lot more points than Carlos, certainly a lot more coming into this weekend. He's bested him for most of the season on Sundays, on race days, and yet Sainz is the first one to get that podium. That must have been a bitter pill to swallow for him to a degree, but he fronted up, bigger man, and he stood under that podium and celebrated with the team. And I think that is magic, and it goes to show the kind of culture that James Vowles is cultivating down there as well.
Hinch, were you confident that from P2 he'd put it on the podium?
No, not at all.
Sorry, Carlos.
Well, I mean, even Carlos said P5, P6. Yeah. You know, I don't think I'm being too unkind. You know, again, you cannot give him enough credit for that lap in qualifying and to set him and that team up for a strong result. But with so many cars out of position, so yes, he did that time on merit, but let's not pretend like the Q3 order was what we expected going into Q3. Two Ferraris out of position, two McLarens out of position, and ahead of both Mercedes. You'd be forgiven for thinking he'd lose more than one spot over the course of a 51-lap Grand Prix, especially if something chaotic did happen, safety cars, red flags, whatever, which, again, we were all sort of expecting. What is just so impressive about that drive, well, that result, because it's not just the drive. The team had to call everything correctly. You know, they didn't have a problem in the pits like McLaren did. They called the tire strategy right. They did everything that they needed to do. He did everything he needed to do. It was a function of being able to convert on a good pace day. And that's where that team, that side of the garage at least, has struggled. And Carlos and I spoke about this in the interview that went out before the race. They've had pace at a lot of these races where he hasn't scored points. The difference between him and Albon in the Drivers' Championship isn't a true picture of where the pace has really been. You look at qualifying, they were even coming in here. So Carlos now actually leads Albon in qualifying. But his side of the garage, whether it was his mistakes, team mistakes, bad luck, which is a part of racing, they hadn't been able to convert on those days when the pace was there. And today, everybody did their job, and it just shows the potential of that team. When you have everything going your way and you all convert, a solid result is possible. You know, you look at the gap, right? Max was, I think, 13 seconds ahead of George at the end. Carlos a further 4, 5, 6 back, something like that. So when you consider that Max beat the McLarens by 20 seconds alone in Monza, that still puts him in kind of a top five range, even with everybody sort of running where they should have been. So again, I just think it was a phenomenal result, and it was great to see Carlos get rewarded for the faith that he's put in Williams by going there and believing in that project long term. And again, for James Vowles and what he's done with that race team over the last, you know, however many months, it's incredible the turnaround there.
I could not be a bigger James Vowles fan. I'll be honest. We've had him on almost every show this weekend, and I love hearing him speak. I love how he speaks about the team. Even on the grid, standing there P2 on the front row, even knowing it may not necessarily end up, you know, as high up the field, he was so proud of the team. And yeah, I think he's amazing. I'm the captain of the James Vowles fan club, president of the James Vowles
member
fan club.
Member 001.
Oh, I don't think so. I think there's a fair few of us. I think there's a fair few. But I think he's doing a sensational job.
Hinch, you were talking about the faith that Carlos has in the team. The team has faith in him. Interestingly, just before I flew out to Baku, I bumped into Matthew Savage, who's the boss of Doralton in London, just randomly in a pub. And quick hello. And his last words to me were, I really hope Carlos has a good weekend in Baku. So it's completely mutual, that the respect from driver to team. And you kind of wonder where it goes from here. In the press conference, Carlos said, this might be it. Our next best chance will probably be Vegas. He said in Qatar, we probably won't even finish in the points. So, but he's such a realist, isn't he?
He is. And I think that's why he ended up with Williams in the first place, is he could see realistically the trajectory that team could have. He knew it wasn't going to be an overnight thing. He didn't want this to be a short-term deal. He was always in it for the long haul, and the long-term vision that James had and that he presented to him, Carlos could realistically see coming to fruition. And I love the fact that they're not going to look at this now with, sort of false hopes for the rest of the season. This was one of those rare events when you're in a mid-level team, when things go your way. I keep using this reference, or I apologize, we've used it a couple times this weekend, but you think back to Brazil last year with Alpine, right? That brilliant double podium. A rare situation presented itself, but they had to execute it, and they did. They weren't thinking that they were then going to go to Abu Dhabi and be a double podium again, right? I think it's important in this series when you have those opportunities to capitalize on them, but then also not lose sight of where you really stand in the pecking order and make sure when you go to the next race, your expectations are calibrated appropriately, because going into a race with expectations that are unrealistic can actually be very damaging for the whole team.
And Carlos jumped from P18 in the driver standings, which was, I mean, that's so surprising to see a name like Carlos Sainz down there. He jumped up to P12 and he's scored almost as many points today as he has done all season. And it's funny that Carlos is saying next best shot is Vegas, Qatar's a no-go. When we had James Vowles on earlier, Hinch, he was saying, well, Singapore's probably not great, but look, Mexico and Brazil could be brilliant for us. Vegas is going to be great. Qatar and Abu Dhabi will be great. So I think James is perhaps, maybe he was buoyed from the podium, still soaking up
the
champagne.
Fresh off the champagne. Yeah.
We're going to win every race.
But he certainly sounded optimistic that Williams will be up there.
Look, let's bring it back to here and to P2 on the podium now. George Russell, I mean, he's been ill all weekend. It didn't hold him back, did it?
No, it didn't. It was such a difficult qualifying session, right? So it's tough to know what the true pace of that car was, but Kimi was right up there. Neither George nor Kimi made any mistakes, which I think was obviously first and foremost in qualifying. And in the race, it was a very George Russell kind of drive, and it was a very Mercedes kind of... It was conditions conducive to Mercedes doing well. Good brake events, traction zones, and cool temperatures. I loved that once again we saw George kind of aiding the strategy calls from the cockpit, even preempting a call from the pit wall saying, I think we should stay on these tires for a bit. And his engineer says, I was just about to say the same thing to you. So it was sort of a quintessentially George Russell drive, and to do it when you're under the weather as well and been suffering for the last few days, that much more impressive. I think he would have welcomed safety cars maybe a bit more than anybody else even, just to get a little bit of reprieve and catch his breath a bit.
And it's got progressively cooler this weekend, which has probably helped them as well.
Well, yes, because typically we always say, right, that Mercedes car, it's cold, it's wet, Mercedes will go well. But then we've come to some racetracks this year and it's been cold and wet, and that's not happened necessarily. So I wasn't sure whether the pattern had broken. But this one's maybe confirmed that, you know, they're right back up there. Albeit, I'll caveat that with, we did not have a normal top 10 order from qualifying. Some of those on merit, but some because of costly mistakes that caught, you know, and crashes and into the wall and so on. The likes of Leclerc and Piastri and Norris being out of position from what everyone would have predicted coming into this weekend. So it's difficult to know where their pace measures up, therefore, against the likes of McLaren and Ferrari, who we were expecting more from.
Does George podium if Saturday isn't a gusty, difficult, six red flagged affair? No, probably not. I think it's kind of the point you're making. It was a good race. It was good conditions for them, but it was, you know, some extenuating circumstances.
But
he
absolutely had to get the job done, and he did. It was a pretty perfect drive. He had that one moment, didn't he, though, with his teammate, with Kimi Antonelli, just the expletive issued over the radio. It was pretty close. He had to back out of it, got behind Tsunoda, had to get the job done, back around Tsunoda again. And then hunting down Leclerc and ultimately jump Sainz in the pits and the right calls at the right time when he's not feeling 100%. It's mighty impressive. And you can only race what's in front of you, what's around you, the situation that you're in. And not forgetting that we say, oh, you know, if qualifying had gone a different way, it didn't. And George didn't make a single mistake in qualifying. He felt he had more out there, but he got a decent lap in to stick at P5. Whereas other rivals in potentially faster cars didn't do that.
Look, while we're talking Mercedes, Kimi Antonelli was a guy who came into this race under a lot of pressure. Toto Wolff had described his drive in Monza as underwhelming. He said on Thursday he agreed with Toto. But it was absolutely clear that he was a young guy under pressure who needed to get through this weekend without making any big mistakes. The most difficult conditions of the year so far with all the wind, as you were saying earlier, Hinch. And he out-qualifies George Russell. This was a big weekend for Kimi Antonelli, wasn't it?
It really was. It was a very well timed. It was very well timed to have a good weekend. Of course, he agreed with Toto Wolff on last week's assessment. You're not going to disagree with the boss on something like that. But what was impressive is the fact that he executed when the conditions were so difficult. But we've seen that before out of him. I think back to the very first race in Australia. I mean, he was exceptional in some of the most challenging conditions I think these drivers have seen all year. You then have to add into the fact that this was a strong Mercedes track. Some similar characteristics to Montreal in the sense a lot of long straights, a lot of big braking events, a lot of big traction events. So the car's in a good window. And for me, whenever the car's in a good window, Kimi can perform. He's right up there. Where he struggles is when the setup's a bit off, when the car's outside the window. George can still pull up fourth, a fifth, a sixth out of it. Kimi's struggling to make Q3, struggling to get in the points. So while it was high-pressure situations and difficult conditions that he did a great job in and managing those pressures based on Toto's comments from last week, I still want to see them go to Singapore, where maybe they're not expected to do as well, and I want to see him closer to George. I expect both of them to be up there in Vegas. I don't necessarily expect that at Austin, but I want to see him closer. I think that's what he really needs to prove, is that when the weekend for the team isn't going well, he can still keep pace with what George is able to do.
But there's no substitute for experience, right? And experience is the issue here. Is that what you're pointing at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you see it up and down the grid with the rookies. When the Haas car's in a good window, Behrman is very strong. When the Sauber's in a good window, and has been lately, Bortoleto's been very strong. The Racing Bull, seems to always be in a good window, so Hadjar's always strong. But you do see that separation from the rookies and the experienced drivers when the team is struggling at a particular event. So Kimi's not unique in that sense, I don't think, for the crop of rookies this year. He's just at a higher end of the grid, so it's a little more under the spotlight.
I think I give Kimi a lot of credit for this weekend, though, because he's come off the back of, firstly, an underwhelming, by Toto Wolff's assessment, home Grand Prix. Of course, he had a torrid Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix earlier in the season, and he endured a really difficult European season. And I think the Kimi that walked into the paddock and in Australia is not the Kimi that we saw walk out of the Monza paddock. I think from walking in as the rookie to watch, the next big generational talent, to then having some really difficult results and having to weather a bit of a storm and then literally weather a storm here, a windstorm here, and to come away to out-qualify your teammate, even if George wasn't feeling particularly well, Kimi still got the job done when it mattered. I think it took a lot from him, and I'm really impressed with Kimi this weekend. I think he was excellent, and I think that P4 was on merit and very, very well deserved.
We're still waiting to hear from Mercedes about, you know, confirmation of their 26 drivers. I think George Russell is a given. He's having a fantastic season. Would you guys sign Kimi Antonelli again? Because can I just preface that with, there was a story in the Italian media going around just before this weekend that Antonelli's off to Alpine. Now, I don't give any credence to that myself. What would you guys do with Antonelli?
You have to remember, Antonelli was never supposed to be in the car this year. In the grand master plan that Toto Wolff had cooked up, Lewis Hamilton was still going to be in the car. He was going to give him one more year. Antonelli was going to get that second season in Formula 2, a little more TPC testing, some more FP1s, and then they were going to throw him into the deep end. By having to fast forward that program, I think you almost have to treat this year as a bit of a mulligan. It gives him the opportunity to do some learning as a rookie. Yes, unfortunately, it is on the main stage in front of everybody. But I think if you're Toto, you've developed this kid from a very young age. You have spoken about the generational ability and the faith that you have that he's the next Max Verstappen. It's a pretty big shot if after 1 year you thought, no, I don't think he actually has it. And I think he's shown enough in terms of the pace and the potential. I know Max did it, but Max is different. He's a different breed, even the other drivers. As competitive as this paddock is, all the egos that you see among racing drivers, even this group can get together and agree on one thing. Max is the best guy. They just do. And so, again, I if I'm Toto, I'm keeping Kimi. You have to give him a second season. If anything, it's a blessing and a curse that he got pushed up early, because now he can kind of take this learning year, get that all out of the way. The real assessment of Kimi's abilities, I think, has to start next year.
Well, we will see what he can do next year if he gets re-signed. I think it really does level the playing field, I think, next year with the change in regulations. It's such a huge change. And I'm guessing, yes, great, let's try and get P2 in the Constructors' Championship. But almost more important is building Kimi Antonelli for the future, not putting pressure on him. And let's not forget, he's up against a damn good teammate.
That doesn't help, certainly. But from the learning standpoint, it's a good thing. But it's interesting because sometimes when there's too much of a white glove treatment of a driver, they get, complacent's the wrong word, but they know that they're protected. Every time they make a mistake, it's, oh, put her there, pal, you're okay, don't worry about it. By Toto Wolff sort of changing tune, I wonder if it was a very deliberate change in approach to remind Kimi that, well, yes, we do want you to succeed. We will support you to get there. This is still Formula One. This is still a performance-based business, and you do still have to deliver on the racetrack. And so I wonder if that kind of helped light the fire under Kimi and really reminded him, like, oh, yeah, Toto's my guy, but at the same time, he's got a responsibility to the shareholders in Mercedes to make sure the two best drivers are in the car. I got to make sure I'm one of those drivers.
It's a bit of a tough love approach then, isn't it? But you say Kimi needs a bit of confidence and that reassurance. What better confidence and reassurance can you get than a contract, right? So it's kind of almost a vicious circle of the longer we wait to hear whether he's signed, is that more disruption in Kimi's mind that he's not secure enough, and does that then affect his performances? And equally the other way around.
But is the insecurity helping his performance? Yeah. That, well, you know, that's, is he like, oh my God, I got to do this. Yeah, maybe I'm not going to be around next year.
I've always said that this paddock is fueled by paranoia. Whether you're a driver, a team principal, a technical director, you're always terrified that someone's going to do a better job than you. So, Kimi, whatever it is you've done this weekend, more of it, please.
It's Yuki Tsunoda versus Liam Lawson. Liam Lawson with the momentum, with the DRS, and with fifth position as it stands. He's jumped the man who replaced him at Red Bull.
Lawson Tsunoda. I felt there was a lot going on in that battle, not just on track. You know, you've got the guys swapping positions earlier in the year. It feels like they're both fighting for their Formula One futures. And they both delivered. I know Lawson finishes ahead in P5 and gets that amazing qualifying of P3, but actually, I think Tsunoda had his best weekend by a long way this weekend. And, you know, you're comparing Lawson with Hadjar, who is clearly a talent, but we don't know how good. We're comparing Tsunoda with Verstappen, who we've agreed all the drivers on the grid will say is the benchmark and could be one of the best ever. And Yuki really delivered.
He did. And what I liked was we chatted to him on the post-race show, and his approach and the way he explained and described that final stint was just, it was so mature. There was a maturity to it that I certainly haven't seen a lot out of Yuki. And that's not a shot at him. It's not that he's been immature, but this was just the next level. Because it doesn't seem like they're both driving for their Formula One careers, Tom. They are absolutely both driving for their F1 careers. And he's staring at the gearbox of his biggest obstacle to retaining a seat in Formula One. But he said, I was thinking about the team. You know, I didn't want to do anything that would jeopardize Max's race by maybe creating a safety car. He was thinking so big picture and accepting, hey, six is not where I want to be, but it's better than I've been. The team will be happy to bring this home. I can't make a 50-50 move. It's got to be a 90-10 opportunity. And then on the other side, credit to Liam. He never gave him that opportunity. He did a great job under immense pressure for that whole final stint. So I think both drivers leveled up in a big way and proved it, you know, this weekend.
I thought to myself watching it, how symbolic that it's these two who firstly are holding back the likes of Norris, Hamilton and Leclerc, but are also battling on track. It's not just for P5, is it? That wasn't just a P5 result that they were fighting for today. Lawson with his best ever, Yuki with the season best. And Yuki's also mentioned to us that he does feel he's turned a bit of a corner. It's come obviously with the car perhaps turning a corner as well, but the car also coming into a better window for Yuki. He's got new parts on it that are working for him. Laurent bringing them midway through weekends, for example, in Belgium, to really ensure that he's back up to a level playing field and that he's been working really hard on the long run. And making sure he can capitalise on that each weekend, and he's seeing that then come to fruition, because he said, look, qualifying may be good, but tomorrow's the test for me. This was after qualifying. Today, so race day's the test in terms of that long run pace and how actually I go in race pace now, and the changes that he's been making both to his driving style and to the car setup come to fruition. And they did.
I get that the points are delivered on Sunday and that's where he's been struggling, but actually yesterday's qualifying was huge. Look at the drivers who made mistakes in those difficult conditions, and he put in his best qualifying of the year and never looked like shunting either.
I have an unpopular caveat that I'm going to add to that point, though, because I agree. Anybody that didn't hit the wall yesterday, kudos, because many did. Many very talented drivers did. Had we had a more traditional session where conditions were not extraordinarily difficult and we didn't have six red flags and all these drivers going out, where would Yuki have been on the grid? Would he have been sixth on merit had Oscar not crashed, had Lando not brushed the wall, had Leclerc not crashed? Maybe. But I think there's a little bit of an asterisk beside it because, again, in the race, we were expecting those cars to be able to make progress for a myriad of different reasons. No car really made a lot of progress today. So he finished where he started. But had he started 10th, would he have finished 10th? Had he started 12th, would he have finished 12th? So it was a great result. I just was complimenting the maturity that I think he's showing. I do want to see, again, him back this performance up in a bit more of a traditional session, be close to Max, and be able to keep that second Red Bull up in the first three rows where Max can consistently keep it, but the other car's been struggling.
Can I caveat your caveat with...
Let's have a caveat party.
Let's have a caveat off. You've got to race what's in front of you. You've got to drive what's in front of you. And the fact that we see Leclerc, four-time pole sitter, in the wall, we see the guy leading the championship in the wall, not just in qualifying, but also today, and Yuki doesn't make a mistake and doesn't make a mistake in defending either.
But it's a pace game. This is a performance game.
Those
results came because there was mistakes made in a difficult situation where everyone was pushing to the limit. Is Yuki's limit just not high enough to have been as on the edge as Piastri, as Leclerc, etc.?
Hinch, I think he's gone over the limit too often. And one of the reasons he survived so well yesterday is whilst the Leclercs and Piastris and Albons were being too greedy, I get the conditions. I think it was partly the conditions, but I think they were all too greedy in terms of what they were trying to get out of that particular corner where they crashed. Yuki was driving within himself and got the result. In the race, he was driving within himself, got the result, and I think he's learned something from that, or I hope he has.
It's that maturity. That's the maturity. But you need to couple that with the pure pace. You can't just be a consistent 10th place guy and expect to retain a Red Bull seat. So I 100% agree. He is making great progress in a lot of good ways. There's still one area he needs to improve on, and that's flat-out pace.
I guess you're asking, is that his ceiling? Is he at his ceiling?
Yeah, we can look at it that way. It's just has the improvement as big in a global sense, in totality, as we're talking about it and as it looked this weekend, or is it still just... Is it little improvements that were kind of exaggerated this weekend?
Right, a caveat to your caveat, Hinch, and to your caveat, Laura.
This is good.
I really like the word caveat as well. I'm enjoying this.
But let's go back to when Yuki was at Racing Bulls. He was going toe-to-toe with Lawson. He was going toe-to-toe with Hajar, who now everyone is praising so much. So, yes, I know they didn't have as much experience back then, but I think raw pace is there from the outset. And so I think the pace is there. And Yuki's problem all along is that he's been just overdoing it. And let's hope you're better off at 99% than you are at 110%.
Yeah, it does feel like he's learned that lesson, for sure.
Excellent caveats from all.
I tell you what, final thoughts before we go. Ferrari, 8th and 9th, hello. Leclerc, four-time consecutive pole sitter here.
Yeah, I think we were nowhere. Predicting that. We really believed in that Ferrari pace. I think Lewis climbing from P12 to P8, there's something to be said for that, especially on a weekend in which it looked really difficult to overtake. But I'm not sure we really talked at length about Ferrari in our post show. They were in there with the fight. It could have been a P5 result. Ultimately, it was P8 and P9. Leclerc was then beaten by Hamilton. It just seemed a horrible weekend again for Ferrari.
Well,
no,
and P1 Leclerc, and... Sorry to interrupt. P1 and P2 on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know what happens to early Ferrari promise and pace and how it comes undone through the weekend, whether that's in tyre deg, whether that's in car setup and ride height, whether that's in decisions on the pit wall, drivers not agreeing with them. There's always a little something.
There is. I mean, again, qualifying was so unique this weekend. But I got to say, and it was actually, you know, Montoya on the post show that kind of highlighted it. I hadn't really thought about it because 8th and 9th just seems like such a transparent result. Like it's a bit of a footnote. But in a race where we were expecting a lot of the out of position cars to make big ground and almost none of them did, Hamilton from 12th to 8th and beating Leclerc, that might have been one of the drives of the day. It was kind of hidden and not really talked about. Obviously, Max, obviously, Carlos, obviously, George. But I think behind that, Hamilton's drive, he actually made some progress. He beat his teammate. He was so much more confident in his race car this weekend. He visibly looked lighter and more enthusiastic and happier to be at the racetrack than he has for quite some time. And I really, truly hope that whatever it is they found, because we've seen this in sessions maybe over the last, you know, half the year, in maybe over a day, but it's never over a weekend. He really carried that optimism all weekend long. Even after the poor qualifying, going into the race, he was still optimistic he could make some ground up. Relatively speaking, he did. I really hope that whatever they found translates to other racetracks, because Hamilton's starting to find his groove in that car. That's exciting for everybody.
Ferrari's been a team of moments this year, isn't it? Only moments. Fleeting moments. I think that's how they will reflect on 2025. Even if they do get P2 in the Constructors' Championship, there hasn't been the consistency that you need to win a world championship. Simple as that. Well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Look, next segment, driver of the day. Have you just mentioned who that is, Hinch, when you were talking about Hamilton? Is he your driver of the day?
Oh, I mean, it's tough. It's tough to take anything away from the top three. He's honorable mention at worst, you know. I mean, you got to. The fans voted Carlos. I'm going to support that as well. But honorable mention for sure.
Who's your driver of the day, Laura?
This is just the order, and I'm picking out. I can pick out three names from there. Obviously, Carlos Sainz. Absolutely, do not disagree with. You've got a feel for Max with victories like this, where he's barely on the television. He's so far ahead. It's just mesmerizing to watch him tank it round here without a mistake. Even GP on the radio, your pace is brilliant. Just keep chipping away. Gets fastest lap at the end of it. Grand slam of a weekend in a car that perhaps on the Friday didn't look like it was going to be quite in the position it was in. You've got to give it to Max Verstappen, haven't you? But honourable mentions, I'm going to just read down the order now. Honourable mentions for me has got to be to Lawson, because he had Yuki Tsunoda, who's vying for his seat at Racing Bulls, on his gearbox the whole day, and McLaren, and Ferrari, and didn't let up. Antonelli not buckling under the pressure, and Tsunoda, best result of the season for him. So I've not made a decision.
You're not getting away with that. So
Verstappen's my pick of the day.
Yeah, Verstappen for you, Carlos for Hinch, and I'm going to go for George Russell, actually.
There you go.
We got the podium covered, yeah. Well, guys, thank you both very much. Wonderful to have you on the show for the first time, Hinch, and again, Laura. Many congratulations. There's going to be the patter of tiny feet in your household in February, is it?
There is, yeah. We are expecting a baby. Aww. My first baby, so terrified, delighted, excited, thrilled, nervous, all at once, all the feelings, but it's just really lovely now to be able to share the news, and yeah, countdown is on, my goodness.
Well, it's huge news. Many congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Which brings me on to a family day, Hinch, that's taking place at Mugello. Man, you're driving a Formula One car quite soon, aren't you?
I am. Concerningly soon. Neck is not ready, but you know.
Are you training?
I have been as best you can. But even these, you know, these 20 drivers will tell you there's only so much you can do in a gym. Ultimately, you just got to go and feel it in the car. So I expect to be very sore next Saturday. But yeah, next Friday I get to do about a half day in a year old Haas car at one of the fastest, most physically punishing tracks in the world. So yeah, let's just do that.
I've told him he has to message me as soon as he's out the car to let me know he's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, very, very excited. Very cool opportunity. Cannot thank the team enough. It's been a lifelong dream just to drive one of these things, and we're making it happen. And you'll get to see all about it. I'm sure there's going to be lots of coverage on it by the time we get to Singapore.
Yeah, full feature on F1 TV.
Hinch, I can't wait to see it. Guys, thank you both very much. For more reaction and analysis from Baku, please go to f1.com, the official F1 app, or at F1 on social media. And you can also watch the highlights on the F1 YouTube channel. Next up, it's another spectacular street race. We'll be back next Monday with our preview of the Singapore Grand Prix, the original night race. Thanks very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.